We should be starting. I'm still waiting for Sherim to sort out some of the things. Members from the department, members from the media, of if there are any. I think today I will need some introductions. There are people whom I don't know from this meeting. Maybe before we start the meeting, I'll meet, not me, over to you, not the department. I just want to know the people that are at the back there. Maybe before we start the meeting, can we introduce ourselves? Before we continue, could you accept the invitation?
Good morning, everyone. My name is Christian Ambrose. I'm from Philly Foundation in Middenburg, and I'm a executive member of the Middenburg CPS.
I'm from
Leverkusen.
I'm a member of Middenburg People's Center, and we are affiliated to Middenburg Development Organization.
Good morning, everyone. My name is Michelle Clarkin. I'm also from the Mandela People's Center and on the Mandela Council.
Good morning, everyone. My name is Fadima Shira from the Office of the Deputy Mayor.
Good morning, Chair and everyone. My name is Jameson Matiza from the Parliamentary Monitoring Group.
Good morning. My name is Christine. I'm the Secretary of the Mandela Development Coordinating Structure, and we made a presentation to the committee in November.
Good morning, Chair. My name is Temba Kupula. I'm from Parliamentary Communication Services, second floor, 93.
Okay. Good morning. My name is Huiti Moholo from National Department of Cooperative Government.
Good morning, Chair. Ricardo Ensley, Department of Cooperative Government.
Morning. Vice General Rambo, Department of Cooperative.
Good morning, Sir Kitchen. My name is Renee Gray Lidia Sedeho. I'm the Chief Operating Officer for the Department of Cooperative Government, and I've been asked to lead the team for the presentation.
Good morning, Chair. My name is Marie Ricardo from Cooperative Government.
Thanks for the introductions. I think you know the members. I was asking this session of introduction because I didn't know that Sherim has also extended the invitation to Mandenberg people. It was not in my attention, so I would urge you for today. You don't have a speaking right. Honourable members, members from the department, I think all of us have got an agenda. It's only got two items. It's briefing by the DCOC Anti-Corruption Inspectorate, and getting to discussion, briefing by DCOC again on community work program. I think we are slightly behind time. If we can maybe so that he'll be able to be on time to speak to the time that is under progress. Without any waste of time, then I will hand over to the department for first item.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chairperson. Good morning, Honorable Members. Chairperson, let me also record the apology by the Honorable Minister for Cooperative Governance and Traditional Affairs. He's got two meetings happening at the same time, and he's going to start at the Interministerial Committee and then come over here to this meeting. He did say that we should extend his apologies. Our first presentation will be on the corporate community works program. I nearly made a very big mistake. I also have to apologize on behalf of the Director General, who is at the Forum for Director General's workshop, which is ending today in Pretoria. That is why I've been asked to, in his place, come and do the presentation together with colleagues who are here with me. The community works program presentation, we just want to first of all brief the honorable committee with respect to our annual targets in terms of the plan for the current financial year, and maybe just to say that as a recap, that for the last financial year, if you can show the next slide, please, for the last financial year, we had 89,689 participants within this program, and now for the 6 months from April this current financial year to September, the program has offered work opportunities to 83,791 participants. The work opportunities were created in all 9 provinces across 63 municipalities and covering 480 wards. In terms of our annual performance plan projections for the MTF going to 2013-14 financial year, the total number of work opportunities to be created as per the Outcome 9 Delivery Agreement has been set at 87,000 for 2010-11, and therefore our achievement of 89,689 was against this target. For the current financial year, our target is 108,000. So far, we have had 83,791. The next financial year target is 171,000, and the outer year is 237,000. In terms of cumulative work that has been done so far, just a repeat of what I introduced was, for the 2010-11, that was the 89,689, and then the 2011, we are on course to achieve 108,000. As for now, for the 6 months, we have already achieved 83,000. And the annual participation rate, as per our September report, our 6 months report, is 69,807, and the cumulative participation, as has been indicated, is 83,791. In terms of the annual performance target, we're not that far from it, and we can safely say that we will arrive at the performance target. We have also taken the liberty, Honourable Members, to give you information with respect to how the numbers translate into what we call number of work opportunities at 100 days each, as well as the cost per opportunity and the full-time equivalence thereof. I don't think that I need to go into those details, but just for honourable members or to look at and appreciate what exactly the numbers that we are giving has translated into. In terms of the summary per province, which is the slide, that slide is very busy, but you can maybe, if you want to compare any 3 provinces, maybe closer home, let me take Northwest, Gauteng, and Free State. I'm just picking them up. In terms of the size to be implemented overall, Gauteng has got 12, Northwest 6, and Free State has got 7. So you would see that per province we are breaking down in terms of the sites, in terms of the sites that are currently active, in terms of the percentage performance, and in terms of the number of participants that are targeted, as well as the number of participants who have actually worked. And then we convert all that into number of persons days of work, as well as the present days of work created. And we like we did in the foregoing slides, we also have converted into number of full-time equivalents. The full-time equivalent, remember, is 230 days, and here we are talking 100 days. And therefore, we also, per province, break down, even in terms of the number of full-time equivalents created per site. The percentage performance overall is 45%, where Gauteng is the highest, with 49%, followed by Eastern Cape and Northwest, and then followed by Limpopo. In that order, as you see per the last column, sorry, the last row. Now, in the next slide, we are showing a in a form of a pie chart what slice of the cake is the percentage of sites implemented per province, and again we see that Eastern Cape has got 26%, Gauteng has got 16%, Mpumalanga has got 8%, and Limpopo has got 8%, West KZN having 15%, and Free State 10%, Northwest 8%, Northern Cape 5%, and Western Cape 4%. And then we then translate that into the percentage of participants per province. And if you compare, you would see that by far, Gauteng with its 16% of the sites created in Gauteng has got a bit higher percentage of participants, all equal to Eastern Cape. So this deals with the number of people per site that are in the participating in this program. We also aggregated this per demographics, and if we look at youth and adults and divide them into male and females, the numbers indicate there that we have got a fair coverage of young people and older people. But maybe just to also emphasize the fact that it looks as if the largest number of participants in this program are women, females, if you see in that slide. In terms of disabled participants, Again, the biggest number of people participating are young people, your youth, and also females, even in the category of disabled people. The CWP as a program, honourable members, has got the potential to upscale and fast track job creation, and the track record thereof, in terms of what I have just shown you, show that it can scale up for far faster than its current target suggests. We've got a waiting list of over 1,000 participants in most of the existing sites. The program could double the projected numbers per site with little difficulty. There is significant demand for new sites in different areas, especially in our deep rural areas. There are a range of opportunities to scale up particular areas of work already tested in CWP, especially in the areas of school support, food security, environmental work, as well as home-based care. And with respect to school support, for an example, we place matric lens at public schools, the food security, the food gardens, and for households, schools, and early childhood development centers. And environmental work, land rehabilitation, erosion control, and greening activities, and of course, caring for the needy in terms of home-based care. The map there is just showing in terms of distribution. Now interpreting the numbers that we have put in graphs there in the form of dots all over. We still have a lot of space, and we will be the first ones to acknowledge the fact that we still have a long way to go in terms of covering a lot of places in terms of demand. The department has got a plan to expand, and in this expansion plan, we're looking into quite a number of issues. The strategy is to reach about 250,000 participants by 2013-2014. In other words, to increase by 250 by that target. And we would like to ensure that CWP is present in every municipality by 2013-14. And each of the current sites covers an average of 5 to 10 wards per municipality. The risk coverage, convergence of information on the identification of the most deprived wards in South Africa, and then it will therefore become easy for us to target those wards. The greater majority of most deprived wards are in areas serviced by distressed local municipalities. In other words, honorable members, we are trying here to show that indeed it is important that we have a very great bias towards these deprived wards, because that is where people are unemployed, people are poor, and also where the environment, the surroundings needs attention. And through CWP, you can actually get to those places. In terms of the rollout and site selection, considerations for selection of initial rollout municipalities and wards will be based on the following criteria. The provincial indices of multiple deprivation, area-based measures of deprivation will be the main criterion. Looking at the five domains of deprivation, I have never been able to pronounce this word. I even have coined my own that says depriveness. I'm not sure whether it is English, but. In terms of the income and material issues, employment, health, education, as well as living environment. Honorable members, you'll be the first to agree with me that these lacks are found mainly in deep rural areas, where you find that people do not have the necessary education to can get into programs that will make them employable because of the education skill levels and also the need, especially with respect to home-based care and others, with respect to the health status of most of our rural areas. The alignment with other national and provincial interventions and programs will be the one of our anchors. For an example, the War on Poverty program, the presidential nodal areas, our local government turnaround strategy assessment, as well as our own assessment of vulnerable municipalities would also be the measures that we will use. Now, how would we implement this? In terms of the implementation model, And this is what the model as it stands today, and I will explain the different legs. The Department of Cooperative Governance, as honorable members are aware, is responsible for this program. Now, what we have done is that we have sourced three lead agents. These lead agents have got three provinces each to look after. And each one of them would have a local implementing agent. You would, if you go out today, you will realize that in most of the areas, we do not necessarily have got all local implementation agents. We are still sourcing the local implementation agents. We think that with that, we will have a better monitoring and evaluation of this program, but also we'll be able to upscale in terms of numbers per site, especially in areas where the numbers are not necessarily to the target of 1,000 per site. In terms of the job creation targets and the financial requirements, we just would like to share with honorable members in terms of what this could cost yourself as government, scaling up to by an increase of 250,000. incrementally to the year 2013-14, and here is the amounts that are available in terms of the book, the MTF, and also the additional resources that we're looking for. We are not necessarily, honourable members, coming to take opportunity of this presentation to ask for funds, but we just want to share with you that this is the process that the department is engaging together with the National Treasury in terms of the need for more money to go up. In terms of target participants, in terms of the number of participants that we would like to build onto those that we have. We have also given a breakdown in terms of 2012-13, which is next financial year, up to the year 2014-15. Honourable members, this is the information with respect to this program CWP. We have also given, just as an additional information, the provinces. And if you go beyond that slide, this is just additional information that I would just like to mention, that we have gone to an extent of taking the slide where we were talking to size per province, and now we do have in your pack the table that shows the actual size per province. In other words, if you go to Eastern Cape, and you are in the Alfred Nzo district in the Umzimvubu municipality, where would you get the site? So we're trying to give that information. Honourable members, that information is for you to be handy when you're doing your constituency work, so that you can know exactly where these sites are, and you can be able to go and confirm when we're claiming that we are creating jobs in those sites, and maybe even look at what these people are doing. Thank you very much.
Thanks for the presentation. Members, I think, okay, Peter, you can come in.
No, I just see my hand today. I'll just...
Thanks for the presentation. I would like to recognize the presence of the Deputy Minister in the meeting. We are welcoming the meeting. DM. Here is the presentation. I don't want to comment first. I'll hear from your questions and comments what you'll raise. Then at the end, I'll just come in. I recognize Honourable Smith.
Thanks, Jen. It was a very good presentation. I really enjoyed it, actually. It's sharp and concise and pointed. But just a few questions of clarity. Could you first of all start by defining exactly what a work opportunity is? I mean, I think I know what it is, but for example, is 100 days linked to the definition, or is it an extension of it, or what? And what precisely is involved from the person from the point of view of the person who receives that opportunity? What kind of conditions are attached to it? Then there's the full-time equivalent as a percentage of the job opportunities obviously is a useful figure, but it sounds to me to be very notional. In other words, if you don't actually end up with a full-time job ever, I'm not quite sure what statistical purpose is served by it. But my question would be, how many of those opportunities, job opportunities, are transferable, translatable? In practice, into anything that becomes full time, or are the nature of the beast that there will always be sort of 100-day things which come and go depending on the projects in which the people are involved in? I was very interested in the fact you could upscale the projects far faster than you have done to date. But I noticed on one of the latest slides that the upscaling seems to stop at a certain year. You hit 250,000, and the next year is also 250. Is it the same 250 or an additional 250? I think it's the same. So I'm not sure, does the upscaling stop at that point, or does it continue? I noticed in your slide 11, I know you did make the caveat that, yes, you haven't yet reached out everywhere, but it's quite noticeable looking at it how the clustering of sites is very concentrated in a few areas. Okay, there are a few scattered around the country, but essentially the northern part of the Eastern Cape, northern part of KZN and a little bit of Mpumalanga in the northwest. So I'd be quite curious as to why it's clustered that way. What gave rise to the fact that you get that geographic pattern? And then linked to that question is your slide 14, because you mentioned there's five issues of deprivation: income, employment, health, etc. And you say, you make the point, that these, of course, are largely found in the deprived, rural, often rural municipalities. Point taken. That being the case, then, why is it that Gauteng receives so much of your attention, both on the number of sites and the number of opportunities and presumably budget? Because if Gauteng hardly qualifies, I would think, in terms of that pattern you've just made reference to. And then I wonder if you could tell us who the lead agents are. There's one slide, I think you mentioned two of them. I can't remember the names now, but I've seen them somewhere. Who are those lead agents? And do the lead agents themselves appoint the local implementing agents, or do you? It seemed to be the latter, because you were saying, well, we still have to find local implementing agents everywhere. But I'm not quite sure whether that means we in a collective sense. But I would have thought you appoint lead agents who then appoint their own local implementing, but is that necessarily the case? And, thank you very much, Chair.
Thanks, Honourable Smith. Honourable Wanda.
Thanks, Madam Chair. Honourable Smith has actually covered all my questions. Just one additional one regarding the Gauteng region. Whilst most of Gauteng is covered, Sedibeng region is not covered at all. I'd like to know the reason why Sedibeng was omitted from that huge. Thank you. Thanks, Chief. I could just get clarity on what is the repeat site and what is the table site. That's up there. And I think mine is also just in Northern Cape, Northwest, you know, your most rural area. What is the rationale there? Thank you.
Thanks, Honourable Members, for the questions. I would like maybe to add some few, but Honourable Smith have alluded to many of the questions that are noted. I just want to check, in the presentation you said there's a waiting list of 1,000 per site. Maybe if you can elaborate more, what that does that mean? And also, I just want to check those waiting lists, where is the demand again? Because you had your breakdown slide, it's on youth, so that you check whether who is in need of a job. And also, they've talked to page 11. I also want to add, to highlight in your short version of the breakdown on the programs in provinces. Western Cape here, there is none of blue, but the other slide has some few projects. I think it's three on Western Cape. And also, I think in our last
under the label.
I see nothing of blue. Mm-hmm. Okay. Oh yeah, there was few, because you said three. And also in our last presentation, last week's one, when we were asking for this presentation with the breakdown, I would like to thank the breakdown. It helps us a lot. But there is none from my constituents in Sugarligo. It's only Mkhondo. I also want to check what was the criteria that has been used to select all these projects. And also we ask specifically on Western Cape with Manenberg. There is nothing you have said on Manenberg in this presentation. Thanks.
Thank you very much, Honourable Chairperson. Ordinarily, I would pick on softer questions and leave colleagues with hard ones, but let them take the hard ones, because everything seems to be hard here. But thank you very much for the questions. I'm going to ask DDG Hansby to lead us, and then of course Mr. Rexon Lubengo will also answer some questions. Thank you.
Thank you, Honourable Chairperson and Honourable Members, for the questions. I will take the soft hard questions, and Mr. Lubengo will take the hard hard questions. But I will give it my best shot, nevertheless. Chairperson, with regards to the questions raised by Honourable Smith, You know, in terms of defining a particular work opportunity, we actually look at the number of participants. How many people are exposed to the program now? If you look at the figures here, the figures can be a bit misleading and confusing. Because on the one hand, we are talking about work opportunities, and on the other hand, we're talking about jobs. Now, for this particular program, the preference is work opportunities. In other words, how many participants do we allow to get onto the program? So you will see that if you use different indicators, it could seem like a discrepancy, but it is merely the description thereof. The issue of full-time equivalents, I'll ask Mr. Luvengu to deal with that particular one. In terms of upscaling to 250,000, yes, we are stopping with the upscaling there, and that is purely based on the MTF projections that we've received from National Treasury. We are working with them constantly to see if we can find additional budget. But let me also point out, if you look at, I think it's the first slide with figures on, and it's important to clarify this before this issue comes back to bite us. If you look at 2011-2012, you will see that the outcome 9 target is 108,000. And so far for this year, we've achieved 83,791 participants. We will not achieve for this financial year the 108,000, and I must alert you upfront to that. But it is simply a function of the allocation we've received. We didn't receive the full budget allocation for this year from National Treasury. There is a shortfall of approximately 500 million. I think Rexon can just give the correct figure there. But what we've done then is, in our annual performance plan, we've set a different target in the annual performance plan of 69,000. So in terms of the annual performance plan, we've actually exceeded the target, because we had to downscale the target from the delivery agreement to the annual performance plan. So you can see there's a discrepancy. But it comes about purely because of budget issues. So we had to upfront say that with the budget we have, this is how many opportunities we can actually create.
Can I just interrupt you there, somebody wants to come in? Listen, clarity chairperson, why the 69? What is the basis for 69,000? Because that when you go and measure performance at the end of the day, or at the end of the term, it gives you more than 100% achieved. So if you're saying now already that we've reached 83,000, why did you then go and set the target at 69? Because at the end of the day, when you measure performance, it's going to measure over 100%. Why didn't you then measure it at 83, which is already achieved, which then presents as A target that was achieved and not overachieved. Thank you.
Okay.
Chair, I just wanted to know if the target setting is maybe not realistic as to what they're putting in.
From a point of view that if it's underestimated, of course they're going to achieve the 100%.
Since we're on the same slide,
I'm also a bit puzzled too, because if one looks at that bottom figure, which is cumulative work opportunities created, I mean, cumulative to me is an additive process. So year one is X, year two will be year one plus year two. How can the cumulative figure be lower than the previous years? It doesn't need to be cumulative. If it means the work opportunities created that year, then it's not a cumulative figure, it's just that year. And then also looking at the asterisks there, basically it says that 83,791 stops in September. That suggests that October, November, December, January, February, the program basically shuts down for 5 months. Well, I'm saying that's how I would read it, to say nothing will be created after September because the reasons you mentioned, the budget.
And also to add on that, before I think we will... I just want to check, you were responding saying that because of National Treasury, we didn't receive a full budget of that amount. That's why you were unable to reach the target. You said that. What led you not to receive the full amount? It's the previous year, 2009-10, a performance or what? What led to you not to receive the full amount?
Thank you, Chairperson. Maybe to start with the last question. You know, just in terms of the allocations, this is actually what we received from National Treasury. There was a communication problem at the time with National Treasury as to the actual amount required for CWP. But they've acknowledged that because of that, we need to adjust our targets downward. Now, based on the amount, the exact amount that we've received for CWP, we said that we project 69,000. Now, it was just a projection at that time. But CWP the budget is made up of different components. You have a project management component, you have site costs and all of those things. The department has actually been able to save on the program management cost, plow that back into wage cost, and that is why we were able to go over the 69. So those savings we've used for wage cost. So there was nothing untoward in setting a low target specifically. But we didn't anticipate that we'll be able to generate so many savings out of the program. Because it is a concern constantly raised by our political principles that we must try to keep the project management cost down as we achieve scale with this program. In terms of the 83,000 being a cumulative figure, it is actually not. It is what happens with CWP. During a particular year, people go in and out of the program. So some people work the full 100 days, and others work only for 10 days or even for 50 days or whatever the case may be. And then they exit the program or they go into other programs, etc., etc. So what happens during that period is that, for a particular financial year, you have a figure like 89,000. That indicates the total amount of people that came in and out of the program for that particular year. It doesn't indicate the number of people that worked a full 100 days. Am I correct, Rexon? So it's like an in and out situation. So that is why we said opportunities. We're not saying full-time jobs or anything like that. So in terms of the 83,000 that we have up to this particular point, this is how many people came into the program for this financial year, so far for this financial year. So, going forward, what we're saying is that we can maintain this level at current budget levels going forward for the rest of the financial year. So we're always trying to ensure that we protect the number of participants that get involved in the program so that it doesn't fall. So that when we set our targets for next year, we can base it on our performance of the previous year. And it's unfortunate that we haven't been able to get the full budget. But I think government as a whole has decided that this program is critical. So I think the financial resources will be forthcoming. Obviously, I cannot commit to that, but together with National Treasury, we are constantly working on this. And I must say the relationship in terms of just ensuring that there's an information flow has improved. So we're trying to avoid the problem of not receiving the 500 million that we didn't get for this particular year. And that is why we're so active with National Treasury. Chairperson, if I may turn to some of the other issues. In terms of the concentration of sites, I think it came up a few times in the questioning. The concentration of sites, as we've indicated in the presentation, is based on a number of indices that we use in terms of poverty and deprivation in the country. Now, it's not, as I always say, we don't wake up in the morning and decide, but this particular area will get aside because there is a great deal of demand constantly. What happened, when you combine, the indices for deprivation with population figures, that is why you will see that in the Eastern Cape, KwaZulu-Natal, Gauteng, you have higher concentration of sites. But it is also the logistics associated with the program in terms of the pilot. So when we grew the program, in order to keep costs down, it was done in certain areas where the logistics were easier because it was a pilot initially. This program is barely 3 years old. Going forward, what we're saying is that we need to reach deeper into the rural heartland of South Africa because that is really where the need is. I think we've achieved economies of scale now. So in terms of the logistical costs, we'll be able to manage those going forward and to distribute the program across the country. In fact, if we had it our way as a department, we would ensure that every municipality and every ward in the country has access to CWP. So that is, what is driving us with this particular program. So Sedi Beng, was not deliberately left out, but certainly, as I indicated, we would like to see it in every single municipality in the country. There were issues raised around the lead agents at the moment. The lead agents that we've appointed recently, and I must indicate on the presentation, we're talking about the previous implementation agents. And these were Teba and Sariti. We have since appointed, effective from the 1st of November, we've appointed three lead agents, one being Teba, the other one being Ilima, an NGO as well, and the other one being Mvula Trust. And these are the lead agents that we've appointed. The selection of the provincial agents below them and the local implementing agents below the provincial agents, that is an exercise that we're hoping to do collectively with the current lead agents as well as provinces. Because we are also saying this program has a critical IGR component. And we want to strengthen it by bringing provinces involved to at least play a role in building the capacity of NGOs that can deliver on this program at a local level. So this program, it is important to provide relief to the poorest of the poor while we are looking, while the economy is still taking its time to grow and while the market improves over a number of years. But in the meantime, we are saying people need a safety net at that particular level to ensure that there is some kind of income. There was a question raised about the conditions and the wage levels. CWP, just to simplify, 100 days of work in a particular financial year that a participant is entitled to. If they've completed the 100 days, they have to wait for the next financial year. So within this financial year, but what we've done is we've stretched it over the year. So we're saying it's 2 days of work per week. Initially it was 50 rand a day, it went up to 60 rand a day, now it is about 63 rand 18 cents per participant. It is a requirement of the program to adhere to labor legislation and regulation. So the issue of UIF and all of those things are also contained in there, and I think Rexon will give a bit more detail. With regards to issues raised with regards to Manenberg, we've heard issues surfacing constantly about Manenberg. But I must be honest, Chair, the department cannot respond if an official request has not been laid with the department. So we don't know actually what is behind the Manenberg issue. We were also not represented when the colleagues from, the participants from Manenberg or the stakeholders at Manenberg made a presentation to the portfolio committee. But we are quite eager to assist where we can to resolve any problems that there may be. I'm not saying we're oblivious. We do have some information, and we've requested the implementing agents to look into what is really happening. But you see, I don't want to preempt, and then we say something that is completely out of context or irrelevant, for that matter. So we would like to request, Chair, with your permission, that we can get some more information on what the committee requires us to respond to with regards to Manenberg. I think my colleague Rexon would just like to go in on a few technical issues there. Thanks, Chair.
Yeah, thanks, Chair. I'm trying to check at what is left, the hard ones, I need to go to slide 11. I think that has been, clarified already, that where we see that there's over-concentration of sites is because of the historical site selection criteria at that time, that depended on the pilot and where implementing agents had capacity. We haven't really had an opportunity within the department to grow this program substantially, in such a way that we begin to target properly in terms of where we want to go. There were 56 sites at the end of the previous financial year. And with the budget that we had, we could only start 18 new sites within the current financial year. So we haven't really had the opportunity to address this imbalance, you know, that you see in terms of sites, you know, distribution. And that is why for this year, we haven't even allocated a site for Gauteng because they already had, you know, a lot of the sites. So we focus on the other provinces in order to address that imbalance. And we hope that as we continue in the next financial year, we'll have another opportunity to expand the program and target, you know, properly the most deprived areas in the country and provinces. Just in terms of the expansion plan, the waiting list care, there was a question about the waiting list. Indeed, there's no question that there is a lot of demand for this program at site level. In fact, we do find situations where we have to turn people back because there are no places, you know, for them within CWP. Also because of the principle, or rather the norm of CWP, that any person that enters the program must work on a predictable basis and on a continuous basis until they finish their 100 days. So how many people we get on the program from time to time is dependent on, you know, people who drop out and we replace within the financial year. And I think that is one of the reasons why you see numbers shooting up against the target, because the target is based on the budget available for that year. But as people drop out and we replace them, we count them as a work opportunity. Because a work opportunity is defined as any number of days that an individual has had a participation in CWP. So if you participated for a week, you know, 2 days, 100 days, you are counted as having participated, and therefore you have had a work opportunity. And that's how, you know, we... And then the full-time equivalent, of course, is an average of the total number of work days for that particular year divided by 230. And that is the norm that you know, across even in EPWP, you know, programs, of which CWP is a component of. So that is how, you know, we get the calculations. Slide 14 is indeed about the rollout. As has been already indicated, as we move forward, we are beginning to consolidate the criteria for selection of sites in provinces, which has not been the case previously, and hence the discrepancy in terms of where the need is and where the sites are currently. So what we have here is exactly how we're going to be looking at these issues of criteria moving forward into the next year. And emphasizing the fact that indeed there is quite a good understanding of where the deprived wards are, in which municipality they are, but it's a matter of prioritizing in terms of when do we get there based on the budget allocation from year to year. But it is quite understandable where the issues are. And the alignment with other programs is critical, the war on poverty specifically, and the comprehensive rural development program. Because this is one of the programs that should be assisting with interventions where this program has been found to be necessary as a part of the intervention. So the trend is beginning to be that we will have, you know, CWP sites following the war on poverty priorities and the comprehensive rural development priorities, so that we can sustain those poor households in terms of them having access to work opportunities at the end of the day. Chair, I think that's what I can add to the presentation.
Very briefly. The one is, we mustn't separate this program from other growth, economic growth and job creation programs. And the truth is that, as the government has agreed, we are finding it extremely challenging creating jobs, due mainly to the global economic and financial crisis.
So in a strange way, I mean, I think it's a point that DGG mentioned, I'm sure the CEO mentioned, this program has assumed much more significance than originally had been intended. And for all its inadequacies, I think we have a vested interest as Parliament and government to make it work. I think it's been stressed, secondly, that what's distinct about this is that the community, in some limited form, has a say on the choice of projects and programs. So again, this can't be separated from attempts to revitalize and resuscitate and consolidate and develop the ward committees. And of course, in 2013, we're looking towards fulfilling our output 5 of our outcome 9 performance agreement with the president to actually enhance community participation, not least through ward committees. Thirdly, the majority party, as you must know, has gone on record as saying that we should, by 2014, seek to create 1 million jobs in the form that the CWP allows for. I think, I don't know if Lydia or Ricardo mentioned this, but the Minister of Finance in the adjustment appropriations a few weeks back said that the target would be 250,000, is that right? Mm-hmm. It's still short of what the majority party wants. But I think that clearly this program is going to assume considerable significance. Now, what would help, you see, there hasn't been enough political oversight. I think with the previous minister, it was agreed that I would go out and visit these sites, you know, and see what's going on, but it hasn't come to be. I will confer with the current minister and see if we can't do some oversight ourselves, you know, as the politicians, and then see if we can strengthen the program. But it might be useful for the parliamentary committee to also at some stage next year to actually go and look at these sites. And you can also give us your insights, you know, in what you think we should do as government to improve this program. In other words, all of us, whichever party we come from in this parliament and the government, have to work together in a complementary fashion. You must exercise oversight over us and help us also to implement this program. It has enormous potential, I think. I really do, actually. For all its limitations, in other words, there's nothing that people have. And sometimes we can be dismissive that it's, 100 days added up, what percentage of our own salaries, not least my own, is that, you know? But really, out there, this is regrettably what we can offer, and this is, means a lot to people. So I really think this is a program where Parliament and government and civil society need to work far more effectively together. And I think, Lydia, in maybe another 6 months or so, we should bring, let me speak to the Minister also and the DG, we should all do it collectively, bring all the stakeholders together. Let's review the program. Let's find a day, maybe a year from or 2 years from when it started. Let's bring everybody together, the civil society, the department, the other related departments, maybe economic development, parliament, and people out there who are recipients of this program, and give them a chance to also speak, so that we push this program far more vigorously. Also, the more we insert this in the public domain, the more it also becomes a way of putting some pressure on the Minister of Finance. You know, if they see that this program is seriously being implemented, then the Minister of Finance is also under pressure to give us more money. For this program, provided we show that the money we currently have we're using as productively as we can. Thank you.
Thanks, Honourable Deputy Minister, Honourable
Can I just say one little other thing?
I also think we should look at the demographics, Ricardo, Lydia. There are also white people who are poor, and I don't know how many white people are in this program. They are especially, well, the demographics are Afrikaners, who are also unemployed and so on. So while obviously the demographics would mean it would be primarily in African townships and wards, in the Western Cape, so-called coloureds, in parts of KwaZulu-Natal, so-called Indian, South Africans, and whites. It should be, you're obviously targeting the poorest of the poor, but if you look at what's happening in this country at the moment, there are white workers also, who are human as well, and they are South African citizens. So we should actually make this thing a big thing, I think. And I don't even think it's about us actually realizing that as limited as it is what we've got, and if we all work in our respective ways, different roles that we have, parliament and government, for example, we can really make something of this. It's happened in other parts of the world. There are parallels for this. So we have no choice. There are no jobs that come easily from the formal economic sector, given the global crisis, and look at the euro itself. So in short, there is much more potential. It's not a party political issue, this one. It's about jobs, really. And we all are interested in ensuring that all our people across the divide get jobs who are poor.
Okay.
Thanks very much. Three areas which I'm not clear on. The first one is related to costs, and I think slide 4 is probably the one to look at. So am I right in saying that it's costing 92 rand 24 per person per job per day? In which case, if the 62 rand 18 goes to the person actually doing the work, that leaves just over 29 rand, which presumably is going to the lead agencies. So I'd like to know how that 62 rand 18 is worked out. Who gets the rest of the money? And that does seem to be quite a high percentage of the funds allocated that is going to the people organizing the job. So if you could just tell us a bit more about how that is worked out. The second thing relates to slide 16, where we talk about the agents. And I hear what you said about the collective appointment of the implementing agents. But I think it's very important that there is transparency in this process. There's a set of criteria as to who gets appointed as these agents. And everybody can see that. The third question I have is to do with the reality on the ground. And this is something that I have got time and again in Soweto. And that is, people tell me that unless you have an ANC party card, you don't get one of these jobs. And it comes from DA supporters, and it comes from AZAPA supporters, and it's even come from a PAC supporter. So whether or not that is true, that is a perception that is out there. I've certainly had people who've said they're prepared to write statements to this effect, although I haven't collected any of those statements. But I think even if it isn't true, there needs to be some kind of assurance that you can give people that everybody is going to be considered, because at the moment, the impression I get from people on the ground is that this is seen as a program to reward ANC supporters.
I hope a member from the department has heard the Deputy Minister's input. It said it's across all party lines. I think if there are those who are doing that, it's wrong, because we are all citizens of South Africa. I think if the department can also monitor that down there, and also us as members of parliament must monitor as you have done to double check whether they are doing exactly that thing.
Absolutely, and I appreciate what the Deputy Minister has said. Mm-hmm. Is there not some kind of public mechanism, even a declaration or the form that you sign or whatever, that can stress this?
Honourable Mandela wants to come in.
Thanks, Chair. I just want to follow up really on the demographics the Deputy Minister alluded to, as to the methodology utilised to locating these sites. We are talking about 18 more sites that are going to be created. How do we go about identifying these sites and choosing which ones are suitable, given that the demographics are so broad across racial lines and death?
Just two quick things. I understood after the explanation of what the differences in these figures, the job opportunities, the work opportunities versus the number of participants. To be honest with you, I do think it should be defined by the 100-day story. Because if you have a situation with a large inflow, outflow of people, then the figures get completely conflated and it becomes a meaningless exercise. Then you achieve your targets of 1 million, hypothetically, with 250,000, say, opportunities, simply because people work for 25 days each instead of 100. So I do think it would be more useful to restrict the definitions to the 100-day opportunities that are there. Whether one person fills that 100 days or six people doesn't really matter. It's a 100-day block, to me, which is a useful statistic. The number of participants is not a useful statistic. It could be one day, and then what's that mean? Nothing. Got 50 bucks, that's not a job opportunity. So I think that's one point. And secondly, it actually flows from this Outcome 9 delivery agreement. I mean, the President and the Minister have an agreement. Now, what basically seems to be said here, if I understand it, is despite there being an agreement, a delivery agreement, that agreement cannot be achieved because Treasury is not giving the money. So the question then arises, what's the status of the agreement if it's conditional upon one department of state giving another the funds to implement an agreement reached between the President and the Minister? What is the status of, I mean, 3 years' time, when we review the delivery agreement between the Minister and the President, what are we to say? Oh, he failed. Why? Well, because Treasury didn't give him the money. That sounds a bit of a weird story. So I don't know, how does that issue get clarified, worked out?
Can you get some responses?
Thank you, Chairperson. With regards to the issues raised by the Deputy Minister, firstly, on demographics, I think we would certainly encourage that because, at the end of the day, poverty cuts across racial lines within South Africa. But we also note, obviously, that the concentration, of black and African in particular in the country, and, that is always how this program would look. It is not something that you can typically enforce, but I think there is room, certainly, to accommodate others as well. And we will keep that in mind. The issue around party political links, we always, CWP has a set of norms and standards, which we as a department implement. And the norms and standards are very simple, and it involves communities more than anything else. I can give you cases where, for example, in municipalities which are run by other political parties other than the majority party in the country. In fact, the Deputy Minister went to go launch one of the programs linked to CWP there recently in Witzenberg. So certainly from our side, we don't have a particular bias, and we don't encourage that. At every forum, at every training session, this point is constantly raised by ourselves as a department. That is the mechanism that we've put in place. But we would certainly be interested to know where CWP is being manipulated like that, because it simply cannot be tolerated. We don't want, politicians at the local level to use this to buy votes, for example. And otherwise, it undermines the integrity of the program. Around the issue of demographics and how we finally select the site, Rexon can go into the mechanics, but essentially what we do is we engage with provinces. With the provinces, we engage with municipalities. And out of that process, we identify, according to some of the criteria there and also the issue of population, we identify where the greatest need is. So it's not something that we do completely on our own. So we work with the provinces and municipalities to finally select a site. Then there's a process of site inception with the community involvement and participation. There are community structures that, for example, decide on the work, but also the participants that will participate in the program. So we're trying to make it very as fair as possible. And I must indicate, Chairperson, this program has risk at the site level. You can imagine a program of this scale. If we said it was everything was okay, then, certainly we would not be honest. But there are challenges, and there were challenges. We've identified those, and we've reduced them significantly. Let me give you one or two examples. One of the challenges was the issue around payments on time for people at site level. Being sensitive to the issue of the poor, we, as a department, we could not tolerate that people are already getting a little money, that they get paid late as well. So we put mechanisms in place with the approval of Treasury to pay the wages 3 months in advance to the implementing agent. So at least the wage component is covered. What we said, however, we're not going to enrich the lead agents by paying the total amount of project management, site costs, etc., also in advance. So it's only the wage component that we're paying in advance in order to ensure that people get paid on time. The rest they claim in arrears. One of the other issues is also around ghost workers. We have been able to set in place a credible information management system. In fact, we are working on a new one which is being funded by GIZ to ensure that the information that we get from site level eliminates the issue of ghost workers. So that we almost have real-time information on who is participating and who has fallen out, etc. And people have to have bank accounts and all of these things. I'm just giving you a little of the detail. So we're constantly trying to reduce that. With regards to the issue of the potential inflation of numbers, Honorable Smith, I agree with you. We certainly don't want to inflate. We don't want to mislead, because, you know, at the level of the executives, the ministers are clear that there shouldn't be double counting, there shouldn't be inflation, etc. We must have a correct picture as to the number of participants. And in fact, at the moment, we are looking at restricting the definition between ourselves and the expanded public works program. In terms of the status of the agreement around outcome 9, what essentially has happened is that we have the agreement on outcome 9, and as a department, through the COO, we are constantly in contact with the presidency, with the Department for Performance Monitoring and Evaluation, to look at what is the reality with regards to budgets and performance, and what the delivery agreements say. And we have constant meetings on the program of action and all of these things, and if the COO wants, he can explain a bit more. But just to ensure that there's a flow of information, so that the delivery agreement is not a static document, but it is there to set a guideline for performance. I think what is also important is in terms of the lead agents and how the flow of money, who gets what. CWP is supposed to have a 65% labor intensity. In fact, if you compare it to the expanded public works program, it is much higher than EPWP. So this is actually the benchmark that we're setting there in terms of ensuring that most of the money goes to wages. The rest goes to site costs, about 10%. Erickson can just confirm that. Site costs include materials, because, you know, obviously workers can't paint if they don't have paint and brushes and all of these things. So it goes to equipment, it goes to all the inputs required to operate a particular site. But then you also have your fees at site level for the supervisors, for project management and all of that. But at the national level, what is also critical is that you have the capacity through the implementing agents to run the systems. Now, it should be appreciated that employing and managing a system of 89,000 people is not an easy thing. It requires a huge back office. And you can just go to any bank to see what their cost structure is like. So on the basis of that, we allocate about 10% to the national project management as well. But we constantly squeeze the project management fees in order to plow back into wage cost. And that is the approach that we're trying to follow in upscaling the program as well. In fact, we are busy in an exercise now to see how we can reduce the cost with and push more into wages. So we're constantly aware of that to apply that particular business principle with regards to that. I don't know if I've covered all the critical areas, and maybe my colleague Rickson and the COO should also just comment.
I think we must also be mindful of time. We still have another presentation.
Just a reminder that I'm still want to know about the selection of implementing agents. How was done? Is it a transparent process?
We've actually.
I thought I won't ask any question, Chair. Today, yeah. But now, now with the department to tell us that no, they know nothing about money bank, it's surprising to us. Now you are expecting us and the portfolio committee to give you the information. The department asked now, they know nothing about the money bank. What is that? I thought I won't ask them any question. Now there's a lot of something which is wrong with them. If you are going to give money to TEPA or what, you know nothing. What is happening with that money? That means the portfolio committee must vote for money. She just has to throw it out. Now the money which I'm going to these entities, whether you call them bullet trust or one, it's coming from us. We must vote for them. If you are going to vote for money, that we just throw it out our way, we don't know what's going on. What is that?
I thought I won't ask any question, but now it's irritating that you are coming to us and said, no, you know nothing and we must give you the information. Whereas we have voted the money to get the money. Now we are saying, we are proud that we are creating them. What is that? No, I'm asking that this is the last time I said that. Firstly, the department. The municipality are outsourcing the service which is to do, and then say no, they're creating the job as I would say. Whereas the municipality themselves were supposed to employ the people and do the cleaning of the streets and all that. Now we are saying we are proud of saying people are going to do the streets run per day. What is that? We said, why would you don't put them the mayor that are no more about outsourcing of the service, which are supposed to be done by municipality. Now you say, you don't know what you have done with the money from Teb and Bullet House and all that. I don't know, I thought I won't ask them any question. Thanks, sir.
On the Mannenberg issue, I think we apologize. What we will do, Ricardo and Lydia, within 2 weeks, we will reply in writing to you. And if you want to pursue this thing when we're back in Parliament early next year, it is your right, and we will respond. Is that agreeable on our side? Okay, so within 2 weeks, we will write to you, Chairperson, in respect of Mannenberg. Secondly, the issue that should really be directed to me, I suppose, is the agreement with the minister, outcome 9. You're right, it doesn't affect our ministry only. In fact, amazingly, this came up last week, Tuesday, in the cabinet committee meeting when we reported on our quarterly progress of the outcome 9. This very issue came up. In fact, on this very thing, outside of the formal meeting, it was raised. It was raised at the last outcome 9 agreement that we can't fulfill our targets in respect to CWP. The Minister of Finance's reply, I'm going to hide, I'm not revealing state secrets, was that if you look at all of these targets and you cost them, it's not going to be easy to provide the full funding for all of it. So it's going to be incremental. So we think exponentially, and it's about bargaining, it's about a contestation, exponentially we'll get increases for that. Then secondly, and finally, on the issue of who gets... the issue of who qualifies to get these jobs, my point was, it should not be misunderstood, that there is a criteria, and whoever meets that criteria, it doesn't really matter if they're Afrikaans speaking or not, is entitled within, and if you have 89,000 people who have got the job, surely there's a few whites and a few other people there too who come from relatively advanced communities in the past who should also qualify. And it's linked to my point that we should make this a national task. You know, we should all, irrespective of our party political leanings, we should give our full support to this thing. Now, in order to mobilize the country behind it, to mobilize civil society behind it, you've got to be broad-minded about how you deal with it. Primarily, given the demographics of poverty, it will be African people. But it will not be 100% African people. That's my point. It's linked to my earlier point, and I make no apology for saying that. That is consistent with the norms of the movement that I come from. Thank you.
Thanks, Deputy Minister. With regard to Mannenberg people, I think on their table side, I would suggest maybe to investigate more further, because the response from Ricardo said you were busy with investigations through your lead agencies. So I think Mannenberg people are around here. You can send somebody to get some contact and arrange some other meetings so that they'll be able to brief you what's happening. Wayne, do you want to come in?
Chairperson, yes. If my memory serves me correctly, I think the problem that the Mannenberg, the organization Mannenberg has is with the lead agency. So I think talks must be gone into with Mannenberg directly. That is why they've called on the portfolio. If the problem is with the lead agency.
Because there are any responses that you want to, so that you get into another item?
Briefly, thank you, Chair. Chair, with regards to how we appoint the
provincial agents. It is broadly a transparent process. What we've done is we've said that, you know, contractually the lead agents are responsible for the provincial agents. So there's a relationship that regulates that. But we said at the same time that given our own experience with CWP, we need to ensure that the right capacity gets into the program. But also because provincial governments know what is happening within provinces, they also have a huge role to play in terms of adding value to ensure that we select ultimately the right provincial agents. And here's the criteria. We'll have a panel. You know, there are certain criteria. We will not just pick any NGO. You know, we will ensure that we only pick the best for this particular program because it is in our interest to do so. So I just want to give the assurance to the committee that that is one of the things that we will definitely you know, ensure that takes place within the program. I think, you know, with regards to Manenberg, thank you for the information. It was just simply because we didn't want to respond that we are not averse to giving the information. Whatever we have, we will give to the committee. You know, but we want to follow a process, get the correct information, what the issues are, so that we can give you a proper and full answer, so that we deal with the issue once and for all. Thank you, Chair.
Honourable members, thanks for this first item. I think we must get to the second item, which is the Anti-Corruption Inspectorate.
Thank you very much, Honourable Chairperson. The presentation on the Anti-Corruption Inspectorate, in the interest of time, we have circulated hard copies while Mr. Nkasa is getting the soft copy up. I will start speaking to the presentation if honourable members agree. This presentation emanated from the request by the honourable committee to come and talk to you about the inspectorate and what they do. First of all, the Department of Cooperative Governance and Traditional Affairs has got a responsibility towards assisting or supporting both provinces and sector departments as well as municipalities. With respect to this particular function of Anti-Corruption Inspectorate, the bias is on the support to local government in dealing with corruption specifically. We also make use of this inspectorate to respond to allegations of corruption that get reported to us. But also we therefore this then becomes our dedicated intervention unit, if one may say so. The main purpose is to deal with allegations of corruption within municipalities and the line departments, in other words, departments that deal with local government in provinces and also within ourselves as COCTA. The in terms of the mandate, the Anti-Corruption Inspectorate is mandated to combat corruption, particularly within the local government, and to promote good governance through training municipal officials and councillors on ethical behaviour in order to proactively combat corruption. The Inspectorate is also mandated to investigate allegations of corruption emanating within its line provincial departments and within national departments, as I have said. The mandate, as it were, also promotes the code of conduct for councillors and officials as outlined in Schedules 1 and 2 of the Municipal Systems Act, which gives the provision with respect to councillors that says councillors must perform the functions of office in good faith, honesty, and in transparent manner, and at all times act in the best interest of the municipality in such a way that the credibility and integrity of the municipality are not compromised. With respect to the staff, the Schedule 2 in particular points out that the staff member of a municipality must at all times loyally execute the lawful policies of the municipal council, perform the functions of office in good faith, diligently, honestly, and in transparent manner, act in such a way that the spirit, purport, and objects of Section 50 are promoted, Those are if you like, Honourable Member, but in terms of Schedule 2, the characteristics of officials and staff that we need, that must be in municipalities. The objectives of the anti-corruption inspectorate includes, amongst others, to conduct investigations on reported allegations of fraud and corruption activities, to liaise and coordinate the investigations referred and conducted by provinces, and provide support when necessary, to implement, enhance, and manage whistleblowing channels, to support municipalities in developing anti-corruption strategies and fraud prevention plans, to promote good governance through training of municipality officials on ethical conduct, to elaborate and complement the work done by stakeholders such as the Department of Public Service and Administration, the Presidency, Public Service Commission, and other stakeholders in combating fraud and corruption. They also support in terms of security vetting of department officials. The role, therefore, should be seen in the light that they do conduct preliminary investigations with regard to allegations of corruption received by the department and make necessary recommendations to the minister. They work closely with other stakeholders such as the Department of Public Administration, Public Service, and also the South African Revenue Services, and the Presidency dealing with matters of interest, for instance, in terms of dealing with cases that come through the presidential hotline and those. They coordinate investigations conducted by various anti-corruption units in provinces and provide support and guidance when necessary. They also liaise with security agencies such as the HOCS, the Special Investigation Unit, and other investigating agencies in developing a working relationship to combat corruption. Their role is also to monitor the implementation of recommendations made by the investigation agencies. In terms of the work that they have in their hands for the current financial year, the slide shows the number of cases that specifically come from the presidential hotline per province with respect to the work that they've done. I must say that as you see, the number of cases that have been done and the number of cases that are being handled is quite low compared to the number of cases that have been referred to. Just typically, the Eastern Cape, if you see, there are 5 cases and all of them are still outstanding. And that goes on and on, and with even with the national cases. So, honourable members, we see the anti-corruption inspectorate as a tool that will enable the department to realise its mission with combating fraud and corruption, and which might undermine service delivery in our communities. However, one needs to hasten and say that this, as it is at its formative phase, the anti-corruption inspectorate has not yet made a lot of strides in terms of the work that they have done. This has been particularly attributed to the fact that it has just been recently capacitated to almost full, and we are now looking at their action plan to deal with the cases that are before them. Thank you.
COO. I want you to try.
Chairperson, thank you. Chairperson, last week we had this presentation when the minister was here and it was referred back. It's come back, Chairperson, but still not enough flesh. Because we said we want details. We've come back with a graph again with figures that doesn't say anything to us. We wanted the substance of this report. We wanted to, if you say to us, 5 cases from Eastern Cape, we want to know where in the Eastern Cape, which municipalities, what is, we don't necessarily want to know the content because it may jeopardize the investigation that takes place. But when you look at Gauteng,
13 cases have came in through the hotline. There are 4 that are closed. We want to know the content of those 4 that are closed. We want to know what the recommendations were. What was the content of that report? And what did the investigation unit find? What recommendations have been made? And have these recommendations been implemented or have they not been implemented? So, Chairperson, I want to say this report must go back again. And until the department, this unit can come to us with a fully-fledged report, Chairperson, this is not what we want to see. We want to see that things are happening within this department, Chairperson. Thanks.
And also maybe to add on that, I was expecting this unit has been established only solely to investigate cases from the hotline. What about the other cases from other municipalities that haven't been reported to the hotline? There was a suggestion, honourable members, that we turn back again the report so that it gives more details for those cases whom they are through with to get what was entailed in those municipalities, what went wrong, what are the remedial actions that they've taken and recommendations thereof. And since in the introductory remarks it's saying it even instills some code of conduct to councillors and officials, what remedial measures that have been done that will maybe come out from the report. Honourable Lauren, you want to say something? No?
I guess that depends on whether or not we're going to open the whole thing to discussion or we're going to refer it back. I'm open to what the committee decides.
I said there is a suggestion. Are we discussing what we have received? Or maybe to move further, that next week we're having a strategic plan where we have already also invited the department to do some few presentations. Maybe it can be done there. Wendy?
Chairperson, yes, I think that this must come back there, but I think we need to give the terms of reference so that there's a clear understanding of what we want. Because obviously what we said last week wasn't properly understood. So we need to give clear terms of reference for this report so that when it comes back, it's the document that we want, the substance that we want. For instance, Chairperson, I'm saying if there are 5 cases from the presidential hotline, when did these cases come in? That will give us a sense of how much time has lapsed since this report has been made. There are, as you correctly stated, Are these investigations or these queries that they are or concerns that they are only coming from the presidential hotline? What about the oversight? What about the issues that the department is picking up? Because surely the department picks up irregularities. The provinces pick up things within. We spoke about the investigations in the Northwest Province, the municipalities that have been under investigation. They've long been done. We want the outcome thereof. We want to see what the recommendations were, and not only the Northwest, I think in the Eastern Cape as well. We want those reports, Chairperson. And if we're saying that the department must be one of the, or the, not department, but the unit is going to make a presentation, then these are the documents that they need to bring with to us next week, Chairperson. Thanks.
Yeah, Chair, unfortunately I didn't bring my document from last week because I had a scribble of questions down then, but some of the things are still relevant as I recall from the conversation. For example, I do recall we wanted to know something about the staff establishment, who does what, whether you're fully capacitated. The issue of the sources of investigation, I mean the information sources, this is a key one, because as I recall in our last presentation, the presidential hotline was one of, I think, 3 sources, but here it's the only one, and I forget where others are. But I mean, for example, there are high-profile cases one hears about all the time. In Durban, in the High Court, in KZN, they've just thrown out an 850 million tender from the Durban municipality on the grounds of a completely corrupt process. Now, is that the kind of thing that you guys will get involved in, or what? I've got no idea. All 25 municipalities in the Northwest are under investigation. Has that got anything to do with this anti-corruption unit? Or is that a parallel process that's separate altogether from what you do? I really don't know. So I would like to know whether you're, tactically speaking, not in the generalized phraseology, to what extent your brief includes all of this other kind of things as well. I do think, Chair, also, I would be particularly keen to know how the unit splits its activities. I mean, it seems to me that an anti-corruption body should be primarily investigated and concentrated on combating corruption. And things like training counsellors and things, to me, I mean, I know it's part of anti-corruption, but it's almost peripheral. This is a sort of a policing thing. But maybe I've got it wrong, because it does say, you know, to corrupt, promote good governance. But I'm wondering whether that's, you know, of your staff, how many are involved in investigating corruption and how many involved are running around training counsellors and training staff. I would have thought the focus would be on the corruption side, I mean, combating it directly through investigations as opposed to the general promotional stuff, because the promotional stuff is all done by Salga, done by all sorts of people. All counsellors get training on how to be a good counsellor. You know, is it really necessary for this unit to run around replicating ethics issues with staff and counsellors, where there is a plethora, I would have thought, of other training that covers that? I would have thought a more focused mandate on investigating corruption would be more important than spreading one's focus too thin. So, Chair, yeah, a few things that I would like to see. The issue of, for example, you know, coordinating investigations conducted by various anti-corruption units in the provinces here. What does that mean in practice? I mean, I can imagine this would be a classic example of turf wars. Classic example. Are you saying, practically speaking, that it actually does this? I'd really like to see concrete examples of this working. Similarly, liaising with security agencies such as the Hawks. Well, that's good, yeah, obviously liaise. Let's see, what are the consequences of that liaison? What has come out of it so far? So, yeah, I too, Chair, would like to see a lot more information. Maybe the proposal made by Heather, I mean, Wendy, I would accept it.
Thank you, Chairperson. I'm going to echo what my colleague has just said, what Honorable Wendy has said. I'm seconding that. But like she has already alluded, that there should be, maybe we help the department so that when they come, that we shouldn't be tweaking this thing. But I was asking myself, does it mean that next time, when we send the department to go and do a better job, should we bring along the previous document to be showing them that we haven't done anything? Maybe I should even say that they should, like, it is an anti-corrupt inspectorate. They should even tell us how does it disseminate, how is the provinces are dealing with. And Chairperson, when you come with the objective in a presentation, I would like to see you addressing this objective in the main document, to be saying you have said you have conducted investigation on reported whatever, then you talk around it. Like the other one which I wanted to say, to promote good governance through training of municipal official on ethic conduct. One would like to know how far, what have you done, how far are you, and which province have you managed to. I see the objective, but when I go to the body of the presentation, I don't see anything relating to those objectives. Thank you, Chair.
On our last week's request for the presentation to come back, I thought the DG was writing on what are we expecting to be included in the report, because he was writing, and some other members. Unfortunately, I think in our invitation that I don't know whether the department has received on the 29th, 30th, and 1st, you're having a strategic plan at French Hook. French Hook. I was saying Fish Hook, so my apologies, Captainian. it's French Hook, 29th, 30th, and 31st. I would like maybe, if you want more when preparing the department, you must consult Sharon so that she will give you. But all in all, we must if they are saying
if you are a mother, if you just bringing up your child, you must always appreciate so that she will always remember that she has done something good. In your last presentation, I appreciated the breakdown, which I clearly understand. I will be able even to monitor. We are able even to when drawing our next year's program, we can be able to go and target these places for monitoring. I appreciate that. That's why I'm saying, if you are a mother, you must appreciate so that you remember that my mother said a good is done correctly, so that you do more excellent things. But with this one, we really need the breakdown. If you are saying it's one of our priorities, fighting crime and corruption, so we want to understand and to know what is the root of the problem, and where is the most targeted problem. And also, I just want also to understand, because according to my understanding, what Honorable Smith was saying, 25 municipalities in Limpopo, are these the very same investigating unit, or they are parallel units that are doing this? Because these are other different statistics, and we've got another one which are saying, all in all, municipalities that are under investigation are 33, 25 in Limpopo, 5 in Mpumalanga, 3 in Gauteng, 6 in Eastern Cape, and others in other provinces. So I just want to check, maybe Ricardo, are there parallel structures or the same structures that will also bring us to the same report and same statistics? Because if you deal with some statistics, I was thinking of saying, remember I said I made a declaration in the chamber, I was thinking to write a short note and say and correct the statistics if they are not the same. Because I said in the investigation unit that you have established to respond to the president's call of fighting crime, we managed to get to investigate 33 municipalities, which is 25 in Limpopo. Is that Northwest? Is that accurate? So that if the figures I'm having are wrong, I must go back to the chamber and correct the figures and apologize to mislead the house and the community at large.
It's just an appeal to the department. When they are coming to sell some presentation to us, you know, they must verify the information that they are bringing to us. Just an appeal. Take for instance now, we are seeing some wards, 6 wards in Kisamu. It's my constituent. There are no 6 wards there. We are hands on. If you are coming to us to make a presentation, at least we must verify the information you are bringing to us. Because you are bringing to us the information which is misleading. And then you go to us as 1,500. I'm there. This is just an appeal. When you are coming to us, you mustn't be proud of all what you are bringing us. All the one that you see is right there. It's just an appeal. Thanks.
Thanks, Chair. Let me just clarify the issue on this case that I've reported here. And thanks, Honorable Committee members. Actually, these cases are presidential hotlines on civil delivery. It's not on corruption. So, we were indicating how far did we attend to this. And also, I think we have noted that we should also indicate when did you receive the information to highlight the date that the information comes into the inspectorate to reflect when did you receive the cases, and also when were the cases attended. But all the cases that are reflected on this slide here currently are from the presidential hotline on civil delivery. And then on the 25 Northwest are the cases that are done by SIU on the proclamation. Special investigation unit. So these are not related to those ones that are filled by the SIU.
Isn't she not doing the same?
Just procedurally, sorry. We weren't raising these questions to be answered now. We're just saying these are the issues we wanted addressed in the presentation.
Yeah.
So presumably your holistic interpretation would explain that whole thing about what your role is in relation to others' roles. And your role in coordinating. Coordinating who, when, how, what. But we'll get that when we get the presentation rather than assuming the details.
I understand what Wendy said.
And does that then mean that the ACI doesn't have any cases of corruption that they're dealing with? The source is only from the presidential hotline.
Chairperson, let me humbly submit that we accept that we haven't responded to what you asked us to do. And go back, and unfortunately, and we'll make sure that this does not happen again. That unfortunately, one was not briefed to what exactly the committee was looking for, because as the colleague is trying to answer questions, I'm also sitting here and getting appalled by what he said in that. So let's go and respond to this one. I will carry the message to DJ, and we'll make sure that you get the presentation. I'm not sure about the invitation to the strategic plan. We will have a look at it. The little challenge that we have is that the dates are the same as the date of COP17. So we'll see which day can we come to do the presentation, because it would need that the presentation be done at a very high level. Honestly speaking, seeing that the committee has been so patient with us, I really profusely apologize on behalf of the department.
I think in last week's meeting, the minister promised us that some of the department management members would be there, and he even made mention that it will be good if maybe we, before our own strategic plan, you had the department head there, also that they would be able to do a correct input in that strategic plan of ours. But I think the invitation will be extended, so that we'll be able to be deployed in all the places that you need to be. Honourable members, on that note, if there is nothing, Wendy is looking at time. The meeting is adjourned. But I humbly request that you just get in touch with those people so that you will arrange your meetings and solve the problem.
Okay.
Man and the people, thanks guys for coming. They'll take whom they can delegate to speak to them. Oh, okay. Thanks. The meeting is adjourned.
I'm going to go to the hospital.
I'm I'm not too sure which one is it.
No, my way to. No, don't worry, don't worry. No, the two of us didn't have a chance to meet. No,